WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Hey, what is up, beautiful people? It is December 18th, Thursday, December 18th, that is, and we have a fantastic edition of Current Sports in store for you. As always, I'm the man behind the mic, your host of Current Sports, Al Martin. We got a lot to talk about. We'll be talking about, of course, what is going on out in Ann Arbor with this whole Jim Harbaugh and Michigan situation. The talks continue, and they continue to gain steam, it seems, day after day after day. We'll chat about that briefly. We'll also talk about Michigan State putting on a whooping to Eastern Michigan last night at the Breslin Center, but some bad news possibly for Michigan State as one of their key players went down in a pretty tough injury. So we'll give you an update on that and chat about that. We'll also have Throwback Thursday for you. We'll even talk about Jay Cutler being benched for the Lions game and what it could mean for Detroit. All of that and so much more, but as custom here on Current Sports, let's start this party like we always do. Here are your Current Sports quick hit headliners for this December 18th. All right, let's start with MSU men's basketball. Brandon Dawson's injured left wrist put a bit of a damper on Michigan State's 66-46 victory over Eastern Michigan last night. But the 25th-ranked Spartans did deny the Eagles another upset win over an in-state foe. Of course, EMU beat Michigan in Ann Arbor last week. Now, Brandon Dawson went up for a dunk attempt. He was bumped in the air and landed awkwardly on that left wrist. Now, the Eagles never led against Michigan State last night. Marvin Clark Jr. had 11 points for Michigan State. Matt Costello chipped in with 10. And Bryn Forbes led all MSU scorers with 14. We'll talk about that in just a sec, so hang tight. All right, according to the NFL Network's Ian Rappaport, the Wolverines are offering the current San Francisco 49ers coach and former Michigan quarterback a $48 million deal over six seasons. Yes, Jim Harbaugh, folks. Now, the $8 million per year average would be more than $800,000 higher than the total compensation that Alabama's Nick Saban received in 2014. Saban's salary currently makes him the highest paid coach in college football. Now, the salary compares very well to NFL coaching pay as well. Now, the New Orleans Saints coach Sean Payton is the highest paid coach in the league at $8 million a year. So, if Jim Harbaugh does accept that deal, and if that deal is in fact true, he'd be competing with some of the highest paid coaches in the NFL. How about that? All right. Bo Pelini was introduced as Youngstown State's new coach on Wednesday, but his departure from Nebraska continues to overshadow his Ohio homecoming. Now, according to a report in the Omaha World Herald, Pelini lashed out at Nebraska athletic director Sean Ekors during a meeting with Husker players that was held at a high school in Lincoln on December 2nd, 2 days after he was fired. Now, the World Herald obtained an audio recording of Pelini's address to the players in which the coach used profane terms to describe Ekors. Now, he says, quote, "A guy like him who has no integrity, he doesn't even understand what core value is. He hasn't understood it from the day he got here. I saw it when I first met the guy. To have core values mean you have to be about something. You have to represent something that is important to you. He's a blanking lawyer who makes policies. That's all he's done since he's been here, hire people and make policies to cover his own blank." That's a quote directly from Pelini during that recording. Strong comments there. All right, Michigan State is getting some national props from ESPN analyst Ed Cunningham. Cunningham didn't hold back his praise of the number 7 Spartans when asked on ESPN Radio's SFB and Russillo show on Wednesday to name his best team in college football this season. And he went on to say, quote, "It sounds crazy, but Michigan State. If you take three quarters out of that season, and those are big quarters, right? Fourth quarter against Oregon, two quarters in the second half against Ohio State. I thought through and through offensively, they're so much more dynamic than people think they are." He went on to say, "I think they've grown and I have to choose Michigan State. How about that? All right. Chandler Parsons, who signed with the Dallas Mavericks this summer, scored a season-high 32 points as the Mavericks beat the Detroit Pistons 117-106. Andre Drummond had 19 points and 24 rebounds, but couldn't help the Pistons end an 11-game losing streak at home. Detroit's last win at the Palace came on November 7th against Milwaukee. The Pistons will host Toronto, the East's best basketball team, this Friday. And I tell you what, folks, in mid of the Mavericks win over the Pistons, Yahoo Sports has reported that the Mavericks are in trade talks with the Boston Celtics in a possible deal for all-star point guard Rajon Rondo. Now, Rondo becomes a free agent in July, and the Celtics have not offered him a maximum contract. The Houston Rockets are also reportedly interested in acquiring Rondo. And Jay Cutler is no longer the starting quarterback for the Chicago Bears. NFL media insider Ian Rappaport reports that Cutler has been benched for Jimmy Clausen. Cutler leads all quarterbacks with 24 turnovers this season. And a pair of Converse shoes that Michael Jordan wore when he was playing at the University of North Carolina sold for $33,387 on Thursday morning. Now, Gray Flannel Auctions, which sold the shoes, said they were co-signing by a high school teammate of Jordan. The auction house said the winning bidder prefers to remain anonymous. Well, that wraps up the current sports quick hit headliners, folks. Right. Well, those were some very interesting quick hit headliners. I'm surprised that those University of North Carolina shoes that Jordan wore back in his college days were only sold for just $33,000. I was surprised they weren't sold for more. It's really interesting, that story, because last year, Gray Flannel actually sold an autographed pair of shoes that Jordan wore during his famous flu game. You guys remember that, right? Back in 1997, the NBA Finals, Michael had the flu and came out and put on a show, to say the least. Unbelievable performance from Mike, and everybody remembers that game. But, you know, those shoes were actually sold for $104,765. How about that? Now, a pair of shoes that Jordan wore in his rookie season with the Bulls sold for $31,000 in 2013, and Gray Flannel executives held back a pair of 1984 Converse shoes that Jordan wore for the Olympic gold medal game for a future auction. I'm pretty sure those are going to be sold for a redonkulous amount. How about that? So, interesting stuff there. All right, folks. Well, again, our phone lines are open, and they will remain open all the way up until 2 p.m. If you want to call in, give your thoughts on anything that is on your sports noggin, you know that number, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. You can also go to our Facebook page at facebook.com/currentsports. Leave us a comment there, or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. I will read your comments or tweets right here live on the air. So, yeah, definitely blow up social media. I'm always on Twitter, even as I'm on the show, folks. Now, later on, like we do each and every Thursday, I love to give those out there, those dedicated current sports listeners, a sneak peek preview into Thursday night's current sports TV sit-down. Now, this week, I'm very excited. It was a great, great, great sit-down with this individual. His name is Mike Ball. He's a personal trainer and fitness guru, folks. I mean, if you want to know how to get in shape, if you want to know how to live a healthier lifestyle, I know that the new year is quickly approaching. 2014 is just about gone. 2015 is starting, and everyone seems to be sitting down and mapping out those New Year's resolutions, okay? And a lot of those New Year's resolutions, I should say, happen to be centered on just living a healthier lifestyle. I mean, if you look at the statistics, everyone at every New Year, every January of every year, I mean, if you look at the numbers, and there's been multiple reports done on this, I tell you what, gym memberships go through the roof, folks. People trying to live a healthier lifestyle. So, you know, and with it being the holiday season, I'm sure that when you go home and sit down with the friends and family at that Christmas Day table, I mean, there's going to be peach cobbler, there's going to be pie, there's going to be turkey, dressing, macaroni and cheese. Oh, I'm teasing myself right now. I'm starving right now. But yes, I mean, there's going to be a lot of things that aren't necessarily the healthiest choices that you can make, but they're going to be sitting right there, and you got to indulge in them some way or another, right? So how do you do that over the holiday weekend? Because there's going to be leftovers as well. How do you do that, but also stay healthy? So I thought it'd be kind of cool to bring in Mike for this week around the holiday season. He's going to show you how to stay healthy around the holiday season and just how to live a healthier lifestyle in general. So you do not want to miss that sit down again. That's going to be tonight on Current Sports TV at 10 p.m. If you go to bed before then, DVR it. You don't want to miss it. You can also check out that episode because we'll post it tonight at 10 p.m. at video.wkar.org. So you'll check it out there. But again, each and every Thursday, we give you guys a sneak peek preview into it. You'll get to hear that interview right here on today's radio show. Okay? It's always a treat for the dedicated listeners out there as you guys kind of get a sneak peek preview of what's going to go down tonight. So going to be fun stuff. All right. Well, let's dive into the show now. I want to start off the show by, I guess, going on and addressing. I have to address this. I would be remiss if I didn't address this because everyone is talking about it still. And it seems as though as there's a new story about the situation each and every day I get behind this mic. But again, according to an NFL report by Ian Rappaport, the Wolverines are supposedly offering the current San Francisco 49ers coach and former Michigan quarterback a $48 million deal over six seasons. Of course, that individual is none other than Jim Harbaugh. Now, the $8 million per year average would be more than $800,000 higher. $800,000 higher than the total compensation of the man, the myth, the legend, Alabama's Nick Saban. Yes, that he received this year. Now, Saban's salary currently makes him the highest paid coach in college football. So, if this story is true, if it's laid out on the table and Jim Harbaugh decides to take that deal, he will be the newest top dog in college football. He will be the highest paid in the sport, folks. Interesting stuff. Because, you know, when discussing this over the past few weeks now, because, I mean, again, the rumor mill has certainly been churning and burning, folks. But right here on Current Sports, in discussing, you know, whether or not Jim Harbaugh would ever leave the NFL to come down to the college ranks and coach his alma mater, I tell you what, I've always said that Michigan has to be offering him the world. They have to be offering Jim Harbaugh the world for him even to consider leaving the NFL. And looking at those numbers, again, $48 million over six seasons. I mean, those are numbers that you kind of have to sit down and at least consider, because again, he will be, if he does take this, he will be the number one highest paid college football coach in the game. I mean, that's something that you certainly have to consider. And again, it's even competing with some of the higher salaries in the NFL. I mean, if you look at it, New Orleans coach Sean Payton, he's the head coach of the Saints. He is currently the highest paid coach in the league at $8 million a year. Again, that is very close to what Michigan is supposedly would be paying Jim Harbaugh per year if he accepts that job. I mean, how can you not consider something like this? So again, like I said, I mean, Michigan has to be rolling out the red carpet for Jim Harbaugh for him to even consider this job. I mean, again, you know, when it comes to this whole thing, I mean, they have to be giving Jim Harbaugh complete control of the program. And Michigan knows the implications that this could have. If they do land a big name like Jim Harbaugh, again, he's an alumni. He used to play quarterback at U of M. He's a Michigan man. If they do land their guy, I mean, just imagine how this will look nationally from a recruiting standpoint. Because you got to believe, I mean, kids know who Jim Harbaugh is. I mean, this is a coach who's been to the Super Bowl. He actually played his brother in the Super Bowl not too long ago. People know who Jim Harbaugh is. Kids know who Jim Harbaugh is. They know the influence that he's had on the game of football, or if they don't, they at least know the name. If he does land that gig at Michigan, I mean, just imagine the impact. I mean, Michigan already is among the top schools when it comes to recruiting, but this could take it to a whole nother level. And it's so interesting because Adam Schefter, he's also been reporting extensively on this story. Adam Schefter is an NFL analyst for ESPN. He's also a Michigan man. He graduated from U of M when he got his graduate degree at Northwestern. So Adam kind of has personal ties to this as well. He said, yeah, I would love Jim Harbaugh to come coach my alma mater. But he's been also reporting on this story, and he kind of talked about it. It's interesting because he made some comments about what is Michigan football becoming? And it was interesting because Schefter went on this rant that I heard yesterday about how Michigan has never been that college football program to adhere to what the other higher echelon college football programs have done throughout the nation when it comes to hiring personnel. Like, for instance, Alabama. Let's just take Alabama for example. When it comes to Alabama, I mean, again, Nick Saban, among the highest college football coaches. He is the highest paid college football coach in the game today. He's got complete control. I mean, he can use the private jet whenever he wants to when it comes to recruiting. I mean, Alabama has rolled out the red carpet for Nick Saban, to say the least. They've rolled out every single color of carpet for Nick Saban. Michigan has always historically been a program that, okay, we're not gonna break our wallets for you, but at the same time, we're going to hire a guy who we feel is capable of doing the job, who we feel is going to do a good job, but we're not going to be lavish with it. Alabama and other programs throughout the nation are lavish, and they treat their college football coaches, for lack of better terms, like they're gods. Michigan has never been like that, and Schefter went on to talk about that and how this would be, you know, Michigan is kind of turning into what it never wanted to be. A very interesting perspective. So, I mean, let's just say if Jim Harbaugh, I mean, when you talk about the appeal to why would he leave the NFL to come down and coach college football? Well, one, because of the money. Two, the circumstance. Would he have complete control? I'm sure Michigan would give Jim Harbaugh complete control. And, you know, whether or not when it comes to from a success standpoint, what type of situation is he walking into? Now, ideally, even though Michigan football, I mean, they did not have a great season. This was not a great team. They have a lot of development to work on right now, especially when it comes to the quarterback position. But if you look at the conference, if you look at just the Big Ten conference that Michigan is in, I believe that if Jim Harbaugh does take over the U of M football program, he will be in a position where he can compete rather quickly in the Big Ten, folks. It's not like the Big Ten amazed this year. I mean, other than Ohio State and Michigan State, it was pretty much an open field, anybody's game. And you saw what Ohio State did to Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship game. I mean, there was clearly a talent disparity in that game, and Ohio State had their third-string quarterback in Cardale Jones. So when you look at the Big Ten, it's not like if Jim Harbaugh comes into a situation, he's up above his shoulders as to what improvements need to be made. Michigan was bad this year, sure. But I believe they are a coach away from competing for a Big Ten championship based on the conference that they're in. Again, the Big Ten this year was MSU, Ohio State, and other. That's how it went this year, folks. So again, to compete quickly, he can walk into a situation where he can do that, I think. So, and again, he'll be treated better than the Pope. Interesting stuff, folks. Again, our phone lines are open, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Call in and give your thoughts on anything we discuss here on today's Current Sports. My man, the man behind the glass, Alex Sharg, now joins me here on the show. Alex, how you doing?
Doing well, man. It's a good Thursday, Throwback Thursday. We got a lot of fun stuff coming up, but along with Throwback Thursday, I watched your beloved Pistons last night, and man,
oh, no.
The defense, the horrific defense does not stop with that team.
No wonder you're squinting today. Your eyes are burning right now, Alex, from watching that game last night. Aren't they just, they're just, and this is the thing about the Pistons, because I watched that game, of course, in its entirety last night. I was actually flipping back and forth, though, because I got off late last night. I wanted to actually cover the MSU men's basketball game, which we're going to get to in a sec, but, you know, it got late. I'm like, you know, I'm tired. I've been at work since 8 a.m. Let me go home and just chill out. So, you know, I'm flipping between the MSU men's basketball game and the Pistons. And it's not like the Pistons are getting blown out each game. I mean, they were in that game. They actually had an early lead, almost a 10-point lead to start the game.
Now, it was a 5-point game in the fourth with like 3 minutes to go. They were for sure in the game. They could have won.
Exactly. And that's the thing about this. Even though the Pistons have had a dismal season to begin, it's not like they're getting blown out here. They are in each and every one of these games. They just aren't executing late game in the stretch. So, yeah, I hope your eyes are feeling better, Alex, because, oh, boy, I can't believe you tortured yourself last night with that game. But let's move on now to the MSU men's basketball team because, you know, it was a solid game for them, I thought, overall. There were some lapses here and there when it comes to the offense and trying to figure out that pesky bump zone that EMU runs. That was interesting because that was one of the first times I've ever seen a zone run like that. And I see why many teams have been having trouble with EMU this season, because that zone can give you problems. But the thing is, And I didn't know how bad EMU's offense was. That's the thing about EMU. They play great defense. That zone is again, very pesky, very annoying. But on the offensive end, I mean, it's like, that's bad to watch. It's bad to watch. It is very bad to watch that EMU offense. So, again, I thought MSU, they get a 20-point win. 66-46 was the final last night at the Breslin Center. But when you look at it, when it boils down, I mean, you kind of have to take it with a grain of salt because there was a moment in that game that had, you know, that really kind of sucked the air out of the Breslin Center. That moment, of course, when Brandon Dawson went up for that dunk, he was bumped in the air, landed awkwardly right on his left wrist. Now, a lot of people thought it was a backside injury, like it was a tailbone injury, because he landed very hard on his backside, but it wasn't. He tried to brace the fall with both of his arms. A lot of the pressure came down right on that left wrist, and he didn't look good. He actually went to the locker room. I don't know what the update is. I was actually listening this morning, and Jim Comperoni was on the radio, and he said that he saw him in the locker room. He walked out of the locker room. He didn't have a brace on, and there was no swelling. So they might have dodged a bullet there because, again, another injury for Michigan State. They do not need another injury here, Alex. But overall, though, I thought, you know, that zone gave MSU trouble at times, but it helped that EMU is such a bad offensive team. I mean, if you look at these numbers, I mean, these numbers, you talk about, you know, hurting your eyes. I mean, my goodness. I mean, Raven Lee, he went 3-for-12. Carrington Ward was 2-for-12. Mike Talley, he went 2-for-12. So I do think you have to credit the MSU defense as well to those numbers. But some of those possessions was just EMU just running around, you know, like a chicken with his head cut off. I mean, they didn't know what to run, and he looked kind of confused, and MSU's pressure also contributed to that. What were your takeaways last night, Alex?
Yeah, no, I was flipping between Michigan State and the Pistons, and for Michigan State, as much as Dawson got hurt, and that's unfortunate, first of all, thank goodness it's now. Thank goodness it's before the Big Ten season starts. Typically, sprained wrist, you're out maybe maximum a month if it's severely sprained. He'll probably be back in a week or two, man. I mean, that's pretty good news. I mean, we don't really know the specifics, but as much of it as it's not broken, it should be good news. The second thing, more about the game, the team really runs, Al. I'd say they run more than last year. Izzo made the comment last game when they played Oakland that last year, a lot of the times the ball stopped. It was stagnant. You get the ball to Trice or Dawson to break, it's already lobbing up 3 or 4 seconds later for an alley-oop. I mean, Forbes was getting up there. Schilling was getting up there. Last year, you did not see once Costello or Schilling or any other role player going up for an alley-oop. I mean, they were using all kinds of players to get up there. Javon Best got in the game. He made some damage. You saw Alvin Ellis get down the floor a little bit. So this team really runs.
Yeah.
And I think, go ahead.
Well, I think MSU is its best when they do get out in transition. But I do think this, though. Well, looking at that game last night, Alex, out of every team, and this includes Duke, this includes Kansas, and this includes Notre Dame, the three teams that have beaten this team, I thought that EMU played the best defense and kind of provided a blueprint, if you will, as to how to defend MSU in transition.
Yes they
because
did.
Because they made an emphasis on making sure they got back after every missed shot, after every loose ball. You could tell that they've been preparing for Michigan State all week, and they've been preparing to play this team and knowing that they like to get out and run, because EMU did a great job at getting back and forcing Michigan State to figure out that bump zone and to run a half-court set. It was very interesting. You bring up Forbes. I thought Brim Forbes had a great game. Sharp shooting guy. Best shooter on the team, in my opinion, right now. I think Brim Forbes has a really nice stroke. He can hit it from anywhere. He went 3-for-6 from three-point land, 4-of-7 overall, led the team with 14 points. I tell you what, this Cleveland State transfer has looked like he's not even transferred, like he's been playing for years. I tell you that. He's great. Gavin Schilling, always active when in the game. I thought that Gavin Schilling had a solid game. He does a great job of playing cleanup man. Similar style of play to Brandon Dawson. Similar role, I should say, to Brandon Dawson. And I think that Gavin Schilling, in many regards, outplays other bigs on this team at times. I thought he had a better game than Costello last night. I thought he had a better game than Dawson, seeing as though Dawson went out early in that game. Again, Dawson was 1-for-5 before going out. But I think that Gavin Schilling is going to be a guy who continues to get better game by game by game. But again, for me, the two guys who really stood out to me in that game, Bryn Forbes, he continues to impress with that hot hand, hot shooting hand. And Gavin Schilling, just the energy that he can bring to a game is very, very important for a team like this. So, Alex, I believe we have a caller on line one. Kurt from Grand Ledge. How you doing, Kurt?
Not too bad, Al. How are you?
Oh, very well. Thanks for calling, man.
Hey, I want to chime in on this Harbaugh thing.
Yeah.
And I want to preface it by saying I really think Jim Harbaugh's place in coaching is in the college ranks, because if you listen to the stories and things that have come out of San Francisco this year, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Yep.
Okay. If you listen to the stories and things that come out of San Francisco this year, it seems that his coaching style rubs professional players the wrong way after 4 or 5 years. Well, that can work in the college ranks, because players are gone after 4 or 5 years. So I actually think his best place in terms of coaching longevity might actually be in college.
For you, Kurt, I mean, what about Jim Harbaugh's coaching style do you think rubs players the wrong way?
Well, I'm just, you know, reading the different things that have come out of San Francisco and hearing the reports that have come out of ESPN about players being disgruntled with him,
right,
maybe
right.
too intense for the pro level, things like that. It just makes me wonder. It makes me think that perhaps he's better suited for the college ranks.
Exactly, and that's what I wanted to bring up too, because he's a very, you know, he's painted to be a very aggressive, in-your-face guy, you know, kind of like an Izzo-type coaching style. But yeah, I definitely see where you're going with that, yeah.
Okay, so, but here's where I see where Jim Harbaugh is the savior for U of M in terms of at least being named as a coach, and it goes back to the fact that there's really a dearth, a lack of branches from the coaching tree of Bo. If you look around and you look historically at assistant coaches under Bo Schembechler and Lloyd Carr and Gary Moeller, that when coaches left as an assistant there and took head coaching positions in the college ranks, they most often failed, whether it was Mike DeBord up at Central, whether it was Cam Cameron wherever he went, whether it was Gary Moeller when he first went to Illinois and was terrible down there.
Mm-hmm.
There's really a lack of coaches that did well as a head coach after being an assistant coach in Michigan, after they got away from all those resources at Michigan. There's really only two guys who did well, and I'm not counting Harbaugh right at this point in time,
right.
And that was Bill McCartney when he was out in Colorado, and it took him 7 years to get it going.
Yeah.
And Les Miles. And Les Miles isn't coming back to Michigan, because there's a whole sordid story underbelly related to Gary Moeller's firing that relates to Les Miles, and there's no way he's coming back.
Right.
Okay? So you basically have one guy who's too old and is retired, and you have Les Miles, so that leaves Harbaugh as the one guy who has the connections and the pedigree that goes back to Bo, so he's really wanted. But here's the question I have. You know, if you take that away and you objectively look at his performance in the past 4 years, didn't he just have a Brady Hoke kind of year? Didn't he just come, or career at San Francisco, didn't he come in and be a winner with somebody else's players the first year or two, and then from there on they've kind of taken steps back each subsequent year? And isn't that what happened with Brady Hoke? Hasn't his quarterback, Colin Kaepernick, gone downhill?
Yeah.
As opposed to developing better?
Yep.
So it makes me just wonder, you know, I think he could be a great college coach. He certainly did an excellent job at Stanford, but again, he wasn't there that long. But I just wonder if he is, in fact, the long-term savior for U of M. But then again, who the heck am I to know? You know, I certainly am not a – I'm just a fan looking in. So
interesting perspective. Hey, Kurt, thanks for the call. And I think that's a very, very – that is, I haven't looked at it through those goggles, Alex, when looking at, you know, Harbaugh's – and you have brought up this aspect to where if you look at Harbaugh's – pro career and where it is now, the state that it is in now, where, again, you got a team when the San Francisco 49ers that hasn't been great all year, and they haven't really been great. They fell below expectations these past two seasons, to be honest with you. And to compare it to Brady Hoke's tenure with Michigan, I think that's a very interesting lens to look at this entire situation with that Kurt brings up. And again, I always go back when making that argument that because you brought up a similar argument with this, Alex. And I always say, again, I think, you know, when you talk about the pro level of coaching, it's different than college. You know, when you talk about, first off, the talent you're dealing with, the ego aspect to it that you don't have to deal with when it comes to the college game. There's a more sort of blue-collar feel when you deal with individual. Because, I mean, realistically, there's a lot of college football players that play the game that know that they have no shot at the NFL. You know what I mean? They play it because they love it. They play it because, one, they're on scholarship and they have to. And they play it for they're not playing for a paycheck here. So, for me, though, when looking at it, again, you're dealing with different aspects and different intangibles when we look at the athletes that are being coached compared to college and pro. And for Jim Harbaugh, if he does come to Michigan, again, the big thing when it comes to college sports is recruiting at the end of the day. When Michigan, who historically has had top recruits year after year after year, if you get these top recruits and they come to your program and you're having dismal seasons, that speaks to your coaching staff. It tells me that your coaching staff is not developing these high recruits when they get to a college campus. That's something that Brady Hoke didn't do. When you have a guy like Jim Harbaugh, who has turned around programs, you know, Kurt brought up Stanford. Jim Harbaugh did a great job at Stanford. Unbelievable job at turning that program around. And it just shows how Jim Harbaugh, I think he'll be one of those guys that he'll draw in those big recruits, and he'll have personnel around him to help with making sure those guys get better as years progress. But it's interesting, though, I hate comparing the NFL coaching to college-ranked coaching. I think it's just a totally different ballgame. What are your take on that, Alex?
Yeah, it is different. And Mark Hollis said it best when talking about Pat Narduzzi and Mark D'Antonio and even Tom Izzo. As a coach, with all the off-the-field issues, you don't have academic issues in the NFL. You don't have stuff like they saw at Michigan with DeMario Jones clocking someone. There's a lot of kind of part therapist, educator issues and kind of role that you have to play as a college coach. And Jim Harbaugh needs that.
Yeah, that is definitely true. Alex, I believe we have another caller online too. We've got Tom from Lansing. Tom, how you doing? Welcome to Current Sports.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I have a comment for you and I have a question.
Yeah, go ahead.
First, the comment. I called you a couple of weeks ago, and I asked you a question, and you had a guest on the air. The question was if college athletics have gotten too big for the colleges. Mm-hmm. And there was a nice discussion. And I don't want to pick on Michigan, but something about this seems wrong. The cost of a college education has gone up. The value of the college education has gone down. You can't keep your researchers, your engineers, your physics people, because they're all going to the private industry, but you can keep the best football coach. Something about that just doesn't seem right.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for my question, regarding the Pistons, Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings, both of those guys have tendencies to do knuckleheaded stuff from lack of concentration or whatever. I don't think that... Well, first of all, do you agree?
Yes. Yeah.
I don't think the Pistons can keep both of them. Which one of them would you want to? What would you see as being the best candidate to go? And also, since the Pistons are seemingly going to get a high draft pick, what position does the Pistons need to fill? And who in the college marketplace are guys that you'd like to see on the Pistons team? Because I'll check them out. I'll check their teams out and see what kind of game they got. So thanks for hearing my comments and questions, and I'll take your answer off the air.
Hey, thanks a lot, Tom. Appreciate it. As far as the Pistons go, let's see if I can dissect this one aspect to another here. Tom just brought up Josh Smith and Brandon Jennings. Alex, you know that I'm certainly developing a feeling that I once had for, you guys know, a former Piston that I did. I threw almost a party when he was let go by Detroit. You know what I'm talking about, Alex. That happened to be Rodney Stuckey. I thought Rodney Stuckey was just, I mean, his game just did not translate well with the red, white, and blue.
He's still in the game, though. Still doing pretty well, actually.
Yeah, he's doing, and that's what happens. It's like when guys leave the Detroit Pistons, they go to other teams, their careers just blossom into this amazing, amazing tenure, right? But for me, Josh Smith is becoming one of those guys. For me, I think he is that guy. I think Josh Smith, if you look at his game, and again, for those that don't know, Josh Smith was actually ranked last in the league. Last in the league when it came to three-point percentage. That is that's crazy to me. And you know what? The thing was, he was running around without a leash. I don't know what it was about this team, and it had to do a lot with the head coach at the time, Kuster. If you look at it, I mean, Josh Smith, even though he wouldn't hit those shots, he was allowed to still take them. And I've seen glimpses of that this year where Josh Smith is, again, camping around the three-point line, camping around the high post, not putting, because I think Josh Smith can be a very effective player when he puts the ball on the ground, starts backing people down, and trying to get layups or get fouled and go to the line. He just doesn't have that tendency. I think he's like a big guy trapped in a guard's body. You know when you play pickup ball and you pick up the big guy and you think he's going to be this awesome big guy that you can have on the court for you because you're a small guy. I'm a small guy and I'm a guard. And you're like, okay, we got a big guy in the paint. And then all of a sudden you see him camping around the three-point line all day and you're like, get your butt in the paint. You're like 6'5". What are you doing? Josh Smith is that guy. The thing about it that makes it so difficult to get rid of him is, again, like I brought up yesterday, that crazy contract that the Pistons have him in right now. It's a contract where, again, I think he's the most overpaid player in the game. And if the Pistons are going to trade him, they have to buy out that contract, which is going to waste a lot of money for them, and they have to ship him elsewhere, and you get nothing for it. So that's the thing that's keeping Josh Smith in the Pistons jersey right now. As far as Brandon Jennings goes, Brandon Jennings has his moments. He's a pure scorer. He can score anytime at any point on the court. But at times, you know, every guard has their off days. I mean, I feel as though when Brandon Jennings starts off games where he's not in the rhythm, if he doesn't get in that rhythm early, he's not going to finish good. If he gets in that rhythm early and he starts to hit shots, he can carry that throughout an entire game. It's like his confidence goes through the roof. But if that first quarter can pretty much tell you what Brandon Jennings is going to do. And so far this season, he's had a lot of games where he just doesn't have it. And he tries to force the issue. Brandon Jennings is not a pure point guard. And I think that's one of the big reasons why at the beginning of the year, DJ Augustine was getting more of the minutes because Stan Van Gundy wanted and was searching for a pure point guard to get everybody involved. I don't even know if DJ Augustine can be that starting guard for him right now. But if I was going to get rid of somebody, it would be Josh Smith, but it's tough because of those contract stipulations. As far as what the Pistons need, again, I think it's still early. This team, a lot of people forget, I mean, they played, the NBA season just started a few months ago. It is getting to crucial time now because anytime you get near Christmas, that's when you have to start playing your best basketball. The Pistons have to start winning games now. If they do end up having and I hate to say it because I'm a Piston fan, if they do end up having, you know, one of the worst records in the league, which they're on pace to do so right now, and they get a high draft pick, ideally, because it's a lot of things you have to look at, because Greg Monroe may not be with this team. So what if they get a big man? Maybe what about Jahlil Okafor? If Okafor decides to leave from Duke, maybe look at him, maybe. But it all depends on where they slot in that draft, because Jahlil is slated right now. If he keeps on the pace that he's going, I mean, he could be the number one draft pick in the NBA. You know, so if he's gone, I mean, you look at another guy. You know, I like Cliff Alexander out in Kansas. He's good as well. So I think ideally you have to go for a big guy because I feel as though this team is just too guard laden right now. So those are two names that come to mind. We have Apachu, I believe, on line three. Apachu, how you doing, my man?
I'm doing good, man. How you guys doing?
Very well, very well.
Some more good topics, man. I appreciate you guys nourishing our minds with some of that inside information on football and basketball. Pistons got a good coach. I don't know what's going on there. I haven't been watching it. I'll wait until they win a few games.
Right.
But they do got a great coach, man. I don't know what's going on there. I gave up on the Pistons several years ago. They disintegrated a great team, and I don't know what was going on in the inside. So.
Right.
But anyway,
right.
The Alabama coach, Saban, he went to the pros a couple times, and he was below average. He comes to the college, and he's a coaching god. And it goes back to what you said, in one word, recruiting. When you recruit these great athletes and they're just coming out of high school, you can win a lot of games. And now he has a dynasty. It could fall. It could fall this year, it could fall next year, and another 5 or 6, 10 years straight. That's the way dynasties are. And I'm saying the same thing about Harbaugh. Harbaugh comes and he's a magnet, I think, for great players because of the reputation. you can say what you want about him taking the 49ers to the Super Bowl at one time. Did he overachieve or did he underachieve? Is he underachieving now? It's hard to say, but, you know, winning in the NFL is a lot different from winning in college.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy from the coach from New Orleans, he's not winning. He's
right.
in trouble.
Right.
You know, and he's a great mind. What I have trouble with is the University of Michigan has exposed themselves, and maybe they're all like that, as begging. They look like beggars, and they look desperate. And it's been embarrassing. It's been embarrassing and hurtful and so forth. But, you know, we got sports is just out of line, man. It's just out of line. Sports is not what it used to be. I don't know, maybe it never was. I think we all need to just take a deep breath and figure out what sports is all about, man, because we're destroying it. You know, it's all about winning. There's one winner every year, and everybody else is a loser. Everybody's disappointed. And I just took advantage of it and took a deep breath, and I said, you know what, I'm not going to let it get to me, man. I'm going to try to look at it differently. I don't want Harbaugh there. I don't want Harbaugh there because he's going to be bigger in the program, and that's evident already.
Mm-hmm.
We're begging him. We're trying to give him all kind of money. He hasn't done it. He was a great quarterback, and he had incredible personality and effort. I don't think he was that gifted athletically, and I showed up in the pros. But incredible personality, incredible college athlete. I think he would do some good things there. But things aren't the same as when he left. You know, everybody's starting to recruit some great players.
Yeah.
Excuse me, great players and so forth. But I have trouble with that aspect. I can't believe, Al, that all these coaches, especially the cadre of great, knowledgeable coaches, are that much difference in knowledge of the game, understanding of the game, and application of the game. I just can't believe that there's a big difference between Harbaugh and the Alabama coach or the Michigan State coach or the Ohio State coach. I mean, it can't be that much a difference in their knowledge. You know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think I just feel bad about this situation. I think they should have looked elsewhere. Like I said before, I like that guy Peterson. But to get him, you'd have to steal him from Washington, and I don't think that's right. So,
right.
I just think that coaches ought to start proving that they can teach players how to play. I mean, anybody who can get great recruits can win games. You know, I want to see coaches develop great players. And you know, you talk a lot in the past about recruiting and rankings of the recruits.
Right.
How big a difference is it between a number one recruit for whatever position in the country and a number 10 recruit or a number 10 recruit and a number 20 recruit? I mean, how much difference can that be?
Right.
You know, you talk about the 100 top athletes, 100 top quarterbacks or whatever. How much a difference can there be? With a good coach and the right program, they can do some great things. You know, that was my comment. Keep on pushing, guys. Like your programs.
Hey, thanks a lot, Apache. Always a very good and insightful call with Apache. And he hits on a lot of great points there, Alex, because when you look at it, I do believe that sports, year after year after year. And the reason why this is occurring is because sports, year after year after year, are becoming more profitable. More dollar signs are being thrown into the games now, no matter what sport it is. And with money comes politics. And with politics comes disparity. And with disparity comes opinions. And that's how it all trickles down when you look at it. And, you know, it's interesting because Apachu is one of the only, probably the only, in my experience with this whole Harbaugh and Michigan conversation, he is the only Michigan fan that has come out and said, I don't want Jim Harbaugh as the head coach for University of Michigan football. And I think he's keeping it real. And he backed it up with some good points because, again, and it goes back to what Adam Schefter did. I don't know if you guys haven't heard Adam Schefter's rant on this. It's very interesting because he talked about, again, what is Michigan becoming? And he talked about how in the past Michigan didn't flash, you know, heavy dollar signs to one individual to lure them to Ann Arbor. They've never done that before. This is new territory. And, you know, it's like, again, Jim Harbaugh's name, if he is hired, I do think his name is going to become bigger than that block M because he's Jim Harbaugh. Michigan this is uncharted territory for them. I've never seen Michigan in this state of, as Apache said, desperation. It's really interesting. And again, when it comes to coaching, at the college ranks, and, you know, he brought up the point about what's the difference between a number 10 recruit as opposed to a number 20 recruit or a top 5 recruit as opposed to a number 7 or 8 recruit. And the thing is, I mean, you're starting to see Michigan is among the top teams in the nation when it comes to landing the big names coming out of high school. They are among the top dog every single season. And look at the year they just had. What it shows is that you are not harboring the talent that you are bringing in. Brady Hoke didn't harbor that talent. Brady Hoke and his coaching staff didn't develop those players. And now you have a big mess. Because you, at the end of the day, you have no excuse. If you're getting the top players in the nation every year, you are supposed to win. Simple as that. Alex, what's your quick take before we get to our next caller?
No, that's a great point, Al. And the thing with Harbaugh that also isn't talked about is, let's say he comes to Michigan. His first or second year, it's not great. I mean, let's say that the same thing they said for Rich Rod, he needs his guys. He needs his recruits. These are Brady Hoke's recruits. They said the same thing about Rich Rod, too. So if you offer him this lucrative deal, it's also going to test the patience of fans for themselves. So I kind of agree with Patrick where there's a lot of intangibles that you don't really talk about when you first see the name at hand. No matter who the next coach is, Michigan fans, unlike Rich Rod, they have to be patient, very patient. I mean, maybe 4 years patient.
I think they're going to expect, if Jim Harbaugh, again, especially coupled with the fact, if this is the deal, $48 million over 6 years, highest paid coach in college football, people out in Ann Arbor are going to expect him to win as soon as he hits the door. As soon as he gets in Ann Arbor, they're going to expect wins, Alex. And I think if he doesn't, it's going to be a huge, huge disappointment. But we have another caller here. Ray is on line one. My man, Ray. How you doing, Ray?
Al, Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, my man.
Happy New Year. Did you get my Christmas card?
I have not. Well, I haven't checked my mailbox in 2 days, so it may be in there. I'm going to have to check it right after the show.
Yeah, would you do that, and I'll call you tomorrow and see how you liked it.
That is too kind. I love you, Ray. Thanks a lot, my man.
Hey, God bless you. I did it from Jesus, okay?
That's great.
You know, I'm going to tell you something, sir.
Yeah.
You lose 50 games in 8 years like they did, and you took a lot of rips and a lot of criticism. And that's over six losses a year, and they lost to Michigan State 7 out of 8 years, Ohio State 7 out of 8 years.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of pressure on those guys now. Maybe they'll humble themselves a little bit and get a coach in there this time.
Yeah. Yep. You think Harbaugh's your guy?
I don't know, because, you know, there's two or three NFL teams in him, and they're saying they're going to up the ante to $8 million, too. They might have to go to $9 or $10 million. I don't know if that'll be enough because, you know, the rumors is his wife likes California. I don't know.
Right,
you
right.
Know, unless you live in their family, you don't know what they're talking.
All speculation. That's right.
It's just like Les Miles. The reason they don't want him in there, you know, Roy Carr said he did some unethical things when he was at Michigan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You've heard that.
Oh, yeah. I heard that on the rumor reel as well. Yep.
Yeah, I don't know if it's true or not, so I'm not going to spread it about it, but I've heard it's out there.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why, you know, Les Miles, he might win him a few more games, but he might get him on probation, too. I'll tell you, there's a lot of things that go on in the South down there, mm-hmm. the LSU, and he's almost got him on probation two or three times himself with some, let's just say, unethical recruiting violations almost.
Right, and it does happen. I've always said when it comes to college athletics, I mean, a lot of teams out there, and a lot of universities are at, as we speak, at this moment, at 1:47 p.m. on December 18th right now, Ray, a lot of them are playing dirty ball as we speak.
Right.
Period. I mean, it happens.
It is.
It goes on.
Hey,
you know?
I've kept up with recruiting for 40 years, okay, while I was a Michigan fan. You're right, Michigan was always a top 10 recruiting class.
Right.
And they'd end up in the top 5 to 10. And there was a whole bunch of players in the South would come down to Michigan, LSU, or Michigan, Alabama, and they'd always stay in the South. And, you know, the speculation was they were getting some money to keep them down there.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know.
Right, right.
You don't know if Michigan don't do it. We don't know if Michigan State does it or not. You know what I'm saying? Unless we're right out there watching recruiting, mm-hmm. how do we know what they're doing?
Right, right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Some people are ethical and some people aren't.
Yep. That's the way the game is played nowadays, man.
Hey, did you get a chance to watch that special on Kurt Warner the other day on NFL Network?
No, I did not. See, I didn't know they had a special on NFL Network the other day.
They usually have an hour special on him. He's supposed to be a first ballot Hall of Famer here at the end of January. I was just wondering, have you heard anything new on when that movie might be coming out?
I have not. I actually Googled it. And I saw that one production company had given up its rights to another production company to take over and produce that movie. But as far as the release date, no idea, Ray. I don't even know if that's out yet. I don't know.
I think they're going to have a lot more about God, and they didn't have much on his hour special. But it was mainly about, you know, the St. Louis Rams and in the Arizona Cardinals. They won one playoff game in 60 years, and he won four at Arizona. And, you know, St. Louis hasn't been any good since he left there, too.
Right, yeah, that's it. Kurt Warner, he's a talent. Well, I tell you what, I'm going to be looking for that movie, my man.
I am, too, because I think it's going to be a great movie.
All right.
I'll keep in touch with you guys.
Hey, thanks a lot, Ray, for your call.
Happy New Year. I'll call you tomorrow, see if you got that card.
All right, thanks a lot, Ray. I'll check right after the show.
God bless you, buddy.
All right. Got to love Ray. Okay, folks, again, our phone lines are open. We've had some great callers. Kurt, Tom, Apache, Ray, if you want to call in and weigh in on anything that we've talked about today on today's show, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527. Let's hit our first. This is our first break this hour. My goodness, man, we got 10 minutes left in the show. That's great. That's healthy discussion, folks. We'll be right back. When we come back, we'll have Throwback Thursday for you, folks. Don't touch that dial. Welcome back to Current Sports. I am your host, Al Martin, on this Thursday, December 18th. Throwback Thursday is what we like to dub it. That's some old school music right there, Alex. Is that the OJs?
OJs Brandy, man.
Oh, man. That's good music. Good music right there. All right. Well, folks, each and every Thursday, not only do we play old school music in and out of our breaks, we take a trip back in time and hop into our current sports time machine to see what happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. Here on Current Sports, we like to call it Throwback Thursday. Let's hit it.
But the Detroit Pistons have just shocked the Los Angeles Lakers.
Wing, there's a drive to left. That one is long.
Eisenman, back over his step. Into the slot for Brown. Shoots. Yes. And there it goes. You never know when to expect it. Darren McCarty said before.
All right, folks, that's right. You heard those incredible moments in history. It's Throwback Thursday, where we take a look at what happened on this particular Thursday in sports history. So today, if you check your calendar, it is December 18th. Man, I can't believe Christmas is next week. Can you believe that? Hopefully you all have done your Christmas shopping and got it out of the way.
Done?
I have not started, man. I have not
I
even
started. I hope your fam isn't listening right now. They will not be happy.
They will not. But they know that I am notoriously known for last-minute Christmas shopping. Like, last year, I did it on December 23rd. Can you believe that? And got everything done. Hopefully, you guys aren't like me and procrastinate all the time when it comes to Christmas shopping, okay? But anyway, again, December 18th, let's take a look at what happened on this day in sports history. All right, let's go back to 1977. The Cleveland Cavaliers retired Nate Thurman's jersey. He was number 42. Nate Thurman, not anymore because LeBron James plays for Cleveland, but you can make an argument that Nate Thurman was the greatest Cleveland Cavalier to ever play. I mean, Nate Thurman, unbelievable. So 1997, they did that. 1961, Wilt the Stilt scored 78 points against the Los Angeles Lakers. Wilt the Stilt, how about that? A team that he would, of course, eventually play for. But Wilt Chamberlain just putting it to L.A. And our next moment, 1962, on the same exact day, so a year later, Wilt Chamberlain scores 62 points against the St. Louis Hawks. I mean, that's unbelievable. So he scores 78 and 61. Then on the same exact day, 1962, he scores 62 points in 1962 against the St. Louis Hawks. I mean, Wilt Chamberlain has got to be in your top 10 list, right, Alex? Without a doubt, right?
Are you asking, is that a question? Of course he is. Come on.
Because some people won't put him in. I had a huge debate about this with Chris and Irv. I was on their podcast.
They're not putting Wilt in their top 10?
No, not even Bill Russell, because they played in a different era and they had no competition.
Oh, come on.
I'm like, you got to be kidding me. You got to be delusional, okay? But anyway, all right.
Basketball is basketball, man.
Exactly. And it's hard to compare eras too, man. But anyway.
It's not like it's a guard who didn't have the three-point line.
Right,
like,
right.
That's the thing. It's like they're big men here. They obviously score all their points inside. It's not like they could have had more points like some of the guards that you have to leave out.
Now let's be honest, though. Wilt, I mean, he was a freak of nature. Him and Bill. I mean, they were just big, and they really had no other competition. You know what I mean? But at the same time, I mean, if you just imagine, if you put them in this era and give them the weight resources and all that kind of stuff. I mean, who knows how great they would be in this era? I mean, it's hard to compare eras. I hate comparing eras, but Wood has to be in your top 10 conversation. If they're not, you're crazy. All right, 1983, Wayne Gretzky of the Edmonton Oilers scored his 100th point of the season. Shout out to Wayne Gretzky, one of the best to ever do it. All right, 1983, that same day in 1983, the San Diego Clippers ended a 29-game road losing streak. I'm hoping that it doesn't get to number 29 when it comes to the Pistons' home losing streak. It's at 11 right now. But again, San Diego Clippers ended a 29-game home losing streak in 1983. 1993, the NFL announced a new four-year agreement with ABC, ESPN, TNT, and Fox. Now, Fox had taken the NFC Championship package from CBS. So, big package deal there. And you talk when you talk about Moulin Sports and why it's becoming so political, it is because of deals like this, folks. TV deals and different corporations are driving that discussion, okay? Again, so that happened in 1993. 1994, Daryl Strawberry. Daryl Strawberry, of course, you guys know Daryl Strawberry, the great baseball player. He pled not guilty to tax evasion charges. How about that? So he said, hey, it wasn't me. I didn't do it. Actually, Daryl Strawberry's, I don't know if you watch or are a big fan of reality shows, Alex, but Daryl Strawberry's daughter is actually on the new reality TV series, Love and Hip Hop. How about that? So, yeah, his daughter's doing that. All right, 2001, John Rocker, he was traded to the Texas Rangers. That took place in 2001. And on that same day, the New Jersey Sports and Exposition Authority announced that they would ban all bottles, including plastic, from Giants Stadium. That's a really interesting story. Okay. All right, in 2002, a press conference was held to announce Robert Johnson as the new owner of the NBA's new Charlotte expansion franchise. And in 2006, this happened, ladies and gents. I believe we have that bite.
Smith on. There's a flagrant two foul. He's going to get thrown out of the game. And now hopefully cooler heads will prevail. Greg Robinson throwing a punch. Smith coming right back at him. And this has turned ugly. Robinson getting involved, grabbing Smith after. The usher's trying to get. Smith still trying to throw some punches there. The usher's quickly trying to break it up. Coach is trying to keep the benches from coming out on the floor. Oh, another punch is thrown. Anthony, and now Checkers going at it. This is turning into some kind of disaster right now. If they don't hold on to some of these players, Checkers needs to hold back. Marty Collins still going at Anthony. The usher's trying to keep the crowd out, too.
Anthony's punch was so loud, you could hear it down here, folks. And he is going to miss a lot of games because of that punch.
There's going to be some heavy suspensions handed out for this, all in a needless situation. A 19-point game with 1:15 remaining. Marty Collins, with a horrible decision and a hard foul and an unnecessary foul, started it off. And then Nate Robinson grabbing Smith. And then it just escalated from one to another. And the ushers had a very difficult time stopping it, as did the coaches.
And then Carmelo Anthony threw a right hand that landed, and you could hear the punch throughout the arena.
Yeah, folks, that was one of the ugliest brawls in NBA history. So that took place in 2006. The NBA had announced fines and suspensions related to a fight, again, that occurred during a game between the Denver Nuggets and the New York Knicks on this day in 2006. Now, both teams were fined $500,000. Carmelo Anthony was suspended 15 games, and Nate Robinson and J.R. Smith were suspended 10 games. You can actually hear, if you listen real closely, you could hear the punch that Carmelo Anthony delivered. Oh, that was ugly. Well, folks, I mean, we embrace debate so much that on today's show, we didn't get a chance to give you that sneak peek preview of Mike Ball. Catch it, Current Sports TV, tonight on WKAR-TV, 10 o'clock. Set your DVRs or watch it live, folks. It's going to be a good one. Thanks so much to all of you out there for tuning in to today's Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR-AM 870 East Lansing. Take care and be easy, people.